The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back as we head into Hour 3 and close our week. It is a delight to bring back Pete Peterson. Dean Peterson is the dean at the Pepperdine School of Public Policy, publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Pete, how the heck are you? Happy Friday, sir.
Always great to end the week with you, Seth.
Thanks.
Doing well.
Thank you. You at Pepperdine have been doing some really interesting stuff on a couple of fronts of particular, special interest to me. This week, and I wanted to talk to you about them. First of all, you did a project with the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, a group I know pretty well. Yeah, talk to us about that group and talk to us about this Oasis of Excellence, that project you did.
Yeah, and actually it involves one institution right in your backyard.
Great.
At Arizona State.
Good.
But this group known as ACTA, or the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, organize and support a network of academic centers and institutes, honors colleges, and programs that are very much aligned with and support a Western Civ approach to a liberal arts education. And the name or the titling that they've given for this network are the Oases of Excellence. So we were delighted to host about 25 of what is now somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 to 70 of these academic centers, institutes, honors colleges from around the country to come here to our Malibu campus and talk about some of the work they're doing to expand and support this the importance of a true liberal arts education, oftentimes in larger institutional settings that are not necessarily friendly to them.
Yeah. This is so important. ACTA, or the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, it's a great resource for even those in the non-academic areas or fields who just want to see what's going on our universities. I recommend their website and their conferences because they do a great job of highlighting some of the problems in higher ed, the kind of problems that your school doesn't have, that your school is a response to, like what are the universities doing when it comes to English requirements, English majors? And it turns out majority of the colleges don't even require Shakespeare anymore for an English major.
Right.
When it comes to teaching American history, it's or just U.S. history generally, 18 of the top 25 universities and their history graduating requirements don't even require studying American history. It's this kind of stuff they highlight. And, yeah, that's the criticism that they put a keen eye onto. But what you're talking about is they're also lighting candles, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They really are providing opportunities for students to find their way through otherwise highly ideological institutions yet still get a great education. And it's one of the things that I talk about, especially with parents of students who are applying to colleges and universities. It's not enough simply to go by initial perceptions of the broader university or college, even if it's one for which you're an alumnus too. You really need to find these pockets, these whether it's a particular department or one of these academic centers that have influence and their own curricula, sometimes offering minors and even majors, where even in broadly hostile institutions, you can find these in departments and centers and particular faculty that you really need to be encouraging your sons and daughters and grandkids to find those places.
Boy, you know, that's a great point, and I don't want to take too much time on it, but you probably find yourself in this In this same place I sometimes do when people tell me that they are leaving money in their will or they're making a donation to their alma mater, and these people tend to be people that see the world the way I do, and I think you do, Pete. And it's I just kind of scratch my head, and I don't want to be rude. I don't want to like give them a negative feeling about what their obviously generous intentions are. But my gosh, people really do need to know about where they are sending their money and how it's going to be used when they leave it to an alma mater they have fond memories of, which may not represent anything like what they remember. Right? Am I making a good point?
The other part of it is to speaking to donors, even some who have really forsworn giving to their alma mater. There may be institutions or centers that are you can find through ACTA that are really worth supporting because they are candles, as you say. They are lighthouses in otherwise fairly stormy institutional seas.
What would be the ideal? What's the exemplar? What's the best example of one that's doing it right? My mind goes to James Madison at Princeton and Robbie George's program. That kind of set the standard, maybe, I think. I don't know if I'm being too parochial in mentioning that one.
No, not at all, because Shiloh Brooks, who's the assistant director of the James Madison program on American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton, was here. But I'll point to one just in your backyard. Another speaker, in fact, the two of us were on a panel this morning, is Paul Carisi, who heads up the School for Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership right there at ASU, affectionately known as SCETL by its acronym. But I even learned today that, you know, they've got over 1,000 students that are engaged in one way, shape, or form in the programs that SCETL offers. And there are a couple of those institutes and centers at ASU.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, no, ASU has been uniquely good. The president has been good about allowing those centers to thrive fairly independently, and that's all to the good. I was speaking to someone the other day, Pete, about these various centers, and they help because when we engage in this debate, you and I get into sometimes about would you even send your kid to a college anymore, you know, the value of a college education. These things kind of neutralize that concern. If the school has a program like this, it kind of helps neutralize that answer we hate to sometimes give, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, again, it does take that deeper exploration for parents to understand and look for either particular faculty or departments. You know, another one we had here I had not heard of before is called the American Culture and Ideas Initiative at the University of Arizona. That's another one there in your home state that is running programs, offering classes, and engaging undergrads in a way that I think most of us would say is important opportunity for students to get a solid liberal arts education.
A solid liberal arts education is a great phrase. A phrase you used a few moments ago was commitment to Western civilization. And it's odd to me that there needs to be a campaign to push and support for those things, right? I mean, we talk about Western civ, we kind of took it for granted, but now we really do have to fight for it. Do you want to say a word on why that is or what it is?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the broader field of Western civ, and this goes back to, I mean, this is not even just a recent thing. This goes back decades to when Stanford basically overturned or rejected their Western civ core.
Western civ has got Western to go.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So this has been around for a while, but of course, many of these trends have been accelerated over the last few years where these more traditional core curricula are being abandoned, in part for ideology, but in part, I have to say as well, is that we have looked at the student as a customer and have run headlong towards saying that you can essentially customize your own curriculum.
Right.
And in that, any thought that there needed to be a core set of texts and arguments and debates that an academic institution wanted to make sure that their students engaged with, whatever they would go into for a major, but they knew there needed to be this core set of understandings, that is decreasingly a popular way of understanding higher education.
That's right.
And so it's not just ideological. It really is about this view of student as individual consumer.
Yeah, the broadly educated man and woman is now at great discount at the universities. It's kind of interesting. Sometimes you can look back at professors of yore who were quite prominent, quite famous in the 40s, 50s, 60s. A few of them didn't even have PhDs. You know, they were so broadly educated from their undergraduate experience. Pete Peterson, let me pick up on that when we come back. Dean Peterson is the dean at the Pepperdine School of Public Policy, publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu, a school that doesn't need a center because the entire school represents already the greatness of higher education. Pete and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Speaking of that aforementioned by Hugh Hewitt, Pepperdine School of Public Policy, it's a delight to have Pete Peterson with us. He is the dean of the Pepperdine School of Public Policy. Pete, another thought or two on Western civilization at such discount in our universities. The import of it. I got to tell you, I with a lot of people, have been rediscovering how prophetic George Orwell's book 1984 is, and we have a hashtag around here, hashtag MOFA, Make Orwell Fiction Again. and there's a line in that book that's just incredibly pertinent. By 2050, earlier probably, all real knowledge of old speak will have disappeared. The whole literature of the past will have been destroyed. Chaucer, Shakespeare, Milton, Byron, they'll exist only in newspeak versions, not merely changed into something different, but changed into something contradictory of what they used to be. It is true, Pete, if you are fortunate enough to get into a university that deigns to even teach a Shakespeare or a Chaucer course, it's not going to be Shakespeare or Chaucer on their own terms or as they understood themselves. It's going to be a critique of them, isn't it? It's going to be more about destruction than enlightenment. This is the discount of Western civilization we're talking about, isn't it, too?
It is. And I'm thinking now as you're speaking, Bill Maher, progressive man of the left, gave a monologue recently about his critique, mostly of his friends on the left and the younger progressives on their outlook on the world, which he calls presentism, which is this view that if anything that came before is almost inherently corrupt, and whether we're talking about the American founding or we're talking about Shakespeare or we're talking about really any area of human history, that it begins with a question of anything that comes before this needs to undergo critique. And that is a very comfortable place if you're sitting in the chair of the critic, but it obviously gets around a certain set of very human questions about context, what people were responding to, and just an essential humility that I think is necessary to have a healthy life, right? As opposed to one that is constantly seeking out things to criticize, which really can be a very draining existence. And one I think, unfortunately, as we look at all the mental health crises, particularly of Gen Z, you know, this past week, we had the professor and social scientist, Jonathan Haidt, came to speak on campus. And the data for this Gen Z generation around mental health is utterly disturbing.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Let me start that in the next segment so we give it its
yep.
full due. That is a second big passion and interest of mine, and I do want to give it its full due. Let me say one more thing with you, explore one more thing with you on this Western Civ thing, because the interesting thing about the destruction of it is it's the destruction of the building blocks that gave us the great things we like about this country, including only in Western civilization, the whole notion of self-critique in the first place. It's almost as if
right.
we're cannibalizing ourselves. Martin Luther King gave a talk at Crozier and said that when he was there, you know, he spent time with the great minds of his words, Plato, Aristotle, Rousseau, Hobbes, Bentham, Mill, and Locke. He said, these were the masters that stimulated my thinking. It just dawns on me, or it seems to me, I guess Martin Luther King's a little bit out of step with the currents of the day. I regret that he is, but to the degree that those of us who still think of how great he was in moving the society forward, I mean, if those kinds of scholars and writers were good for him, shouldn't they be good for the rest of us too?
Yeah, and of course, once we begin to go through this process of criticism, then we are really looking at the world more broadly. We are training our minds to think of everything in a cynical way.
Yeah.
And in that, we are also getting ourselves to a place where the things that could knit us together as human beings, faced with the similar challenges of human nature that were explored so well. And as you say, people look at Western Civ as a monolithic view of humanity. Of course, it encompasses Rousseau, Machiavelli,
right.
Marx, Adam Smith. I mean,
yeah.
these were not people who thought the same way about human beings
That's
and,
right.
and about the good life and
That's
about
right.
those things. So it takes away that opportunity to engage in these foundational debates that really do stand the chance to knit us together as human beings.
Yeah, I think that's right, that knitting us together. There was Canadian novelist Robertson Davies once said, beware the cynics, beware the dampers. That's not what education
yep.
is about, right? Cynicism, yes, skepticism, of course. That's different from cynicism, though, isn't it? A critical eye is different from iconoclasm, shall we say.
That's right. I mean, Lincoln used the phrase, the mystic chords of
right,
memory.
Right, right.
Right. That these are things that really should be mechanisms by which we can see our common humanity.
Right.
But if everything is seen through the lens of power and power dynamics, and because of things the way they were, that this is inherently corrupt, and despite the truth of what someone is saying, that it really does need to be dismissed because of other things that were going on in the world, this is really, A, it's unsustainable, but B, we really need to count the cost of what that's doing in an education that is intended to produce humble, engaged citizens.
Yeah, exactly right. That's well said, Pete. Let me take the commercial break here, and I want to come back on that other issue you were just you were starting to raise with Jonathan Haidt, and then the series. It looks like that might be a nice complement to it. No Way to Treat a Child. As I go into the break, I want people to think a little bit about the throes and turbulence we have put our children through. And as we just think about that, coming back with Pete Peterson, think about how unnecessary so much of it is. Think about, too, not just about how unnecessary it is, but what it bodes for the future. What does it say about a society that is so afraid of its children, it uses them to soothe the anxieties of adults, leading ultimately to psychological, mental, and educational deficits, the likes of which we have never really seen rise this far and this fast. I'm Seth, and he's Pete Peterson, Pepperdine School of Public Policy. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It's a delight to have Pete Peterson from the Pepperdine School of Public Policy with us. Publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Pete, You started to talk to us about Jonathan Haidt's presentation over at Pepperdine, and then I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. And then I think that probably goes into the series that you guys also initiated this week, The No Way to Treat a Child. Go into this a little bit for us, what we're talking about here.
Yeah, well, Haidt was here, Dr. Haidt was here on Wednesday night for the president's lecture to talk really about the challenges and changes that he's seen in the behavior of students, particularly in college classrooms. So this is in part a personal story for him. He has been a professor at NYU for a number of years. And essentially, he charts a couple of major influences that have had deleterious effects on the mental health of Gen Z, those in their teens and into early 20s. The first has been the movement in the, the early 2000s around against play or free play, what he would call essentially a culture of fear and protection that pervaded America and certainly American parenting. You may have had a guest on it one time, and I don't know the author, but is a proponent of what's known as free-range parenting.
Okay.
The belief that you can, as I think many of us who are over 35 or 40 years old, can go out into the street and play with your friends for hours and return when, you know, it's dinner time.
Yep.
That ability to have that free play, as Haidt, again, who's a social psychologist, said that especially in the younger ages, that is an essential part of emotional and psychological maturing.
Right.
You are organizing games. You are debating and discussing with friends. You are setting priorities on what you're going to do for the day or where you're going to go. This is all part of the traditional maturing process for our youth, and that was essentially changed into playdates only. Everything gets organized. All sports are organized. Any time spent outside the house really needs to be restricted and controlled. So that was one. The second was this pox that has fallen upon all of American culture, if not Western culture, which is interactive social media.
Okay.
And he charts really, and did it on a series of slides, a number of mental health statistics from self-harm to reports to emergency rooms for psychological distress and certainly to suicide. Really, from 2012 on, we have seen an incredible spike, particularly among teens and 20-somethings, and particularly among girls and women.
Is he saying this is due to screen time, too much screen time generally?
No, it's not screen time. In fact, he splits and may contradict or disagree with others that says actually for boys their screen time is mostly around video games as opposed to social media.
Yeah.
And if that's restricted to less than 2 hours a day, the data doesn't seem to show these harms.
Right.
But when you get into Instagram and comparing pictures of yourself with others and the other's best life with yours, that has been particularly a part of the growth or the maturing, if you will, of young women.
Yes, right. Okay. I remember seeing him do something on that. That play thing, the first one is of particular interest to me. I got to take a quick break. We can talk a little bit more about it on the other side. And I remember Adam Carolla was testifying, believe it or not, Adam Carolla was testifying to Congress some years ago. And his conclusion was the problem with our youth is that I think his phrase was we dip them in Purell And we don't ready them for a world that requires an understanding of gravity. And we have so protected them that that we end up raising children in adult bodies. We'll pick up on all that when we come right back with Pete Peterson, this gifted academic and academic leader, the dean at the Pepperdine School of Public Policy, publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It's been a delight having Pete Peterson with us this hour. He is the dean at the Pepperdine School of Public Policy, publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. You're looking to go into graduate work to train and work in the fields of public policy, make the place, make the world a better place, make the country a better place. This is the school for you. Pete, we were talking a little bit of about Jonathan Haidt's theses and theories on what we might generally call the crisis of our youth or young adults. And I guess I say youth and young adults now. Is you can correct me if you have a better terminology for it. But it really does start at what we give them, what we do with them, what we do to them at very early ages. And I think maybe at least a positive thing I might say about the conservative movement on this is that it has become more and more attuned to the importance of front-loading not only good values and the good good and decent virtues as recommended and informed by what Aristotle said in Upbringing the Youth, but also the opposing of the bad stuff, also the getting involved and rolling up our sleeves and thinking about, you know, there are pollutions that we worry about with our kids when it comes to healthy water, healthy air. There's something about a healthy brain, too, that we've neglected for way too long. And there is such a thing as toxic messages we can implant into children, too, isn't there?
Very much. And, of course, how those messages are going into our minds,
right,
and how they are really changing the way our brains work. I think in part we're still understanding the impact of social media on brain function and psychology, but I don't think we have any doubt, and certainly this is Dr. Haidt's argument, that especially for the young, that really needs to be that needs to be turned off.
Yeah,
he is actually pushing for some sort of, and he doesn't see another way to do it. And I think this is certainly a subject where there could be some debate. But he is looking for federal legislation that would prevent the usage of social media by youth under the age of 16.
Interesting.
He really sees that in some similar ways as we would treat alcohol.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, or tobacco. I mean, the word I want to use is fetish, but that comes with a pejorative connotation. We have made an expertise of prevention messaging to protect children's lungs. And it's always been a curious thing to me why we care more about their lungs than their brains. It's a curious thing to me. It comes to us through drug policy. It comes to us through the sexualization of children. It comes to us with a lot of different messages we send to our children. And it just seems to me a sane society would care more about children's brains, or at least as much about their brains as they do their lungs.
Yeah. No, that's right. And again, I think part of it is just becoming aware of the research that's becoming increasingly available on the terrible impact on the psychology of our young and the lasting impact that it can have. But at the other sense, the other side, it's, well, how do we best go about remedying this, especially for a culture that has been so deeply engaged in social media at the adult level.
Seems to me we go through cycles a little bit. I had Heather McDonald on yesterday talking about crime in America. You know Heather pretty well. And it just seems to me we go through these cycles. If you think about the late 80s and early 90s, it was a time of terrible and great crime. John DiIullo had that phrase, the youth super predator, that was concerningly arising on the scene. And then we got it right, you know, particularly with the application of Jim Wilson's theories and Bill Bratton's theories on and CompStat and fighting crime. We kind of got it right. And it seems to me at the same time in the mid-90s, there was this new attraction to the classics and the virtues. The Book of Virtues became a big seller. Gertrude Himmelfarb's work on virtues became a big seller. That whole field of literature was pretty prominent then. Seems to me that literature's not very prominent now. And we're seeing in the schools as well as on the streets that same thing we were seeing in the early 90s. Seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to
mm-hmm.
me. Anyway, I don't know. It's just something I was thinking about, the cycles we go through on this stuff.
Well,
we
no,
seem to unlearn
I
what we've learned all the time.
Exactly. Well, and I think you raised on the way that we treat and understand tobacco.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time when doctors were advertising for the good effects and the health the health benefits of smoking.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And we don't do that anymore. And I think we're also still taking account of the impact because social media itself is changing
yep.
and evolving.
Yeah.
This was something else that Haidt made a point of saying. The first stage of Facebook was actually not really something that we needed to be concerned about. It was really messaging, a messaging platform between friends. But once that like button went on, and once that retweet button went on to Twitter, the impact of those decisions, in fact, he quotes from the person at Twitter who invented the retweet button.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And said that was really the beginning of so many of these challenges, that once social media became this, and it wasn't always so. We forget it now. But once social media had these viral implications, that what happened, you know, in a classroom could be shot around the world, or what happened, you know, on a street corner could be shot around the world, that really did change the game and change the level of anxiety for a generation.
Reinhold Niebuhr put it that human desires increase with their means of gratification. We're seeing that again now. Pete Peterson, gosh, I love spending the end of the week with you. I really do. Thank you for your scholarship. Thank you for your school, Pepperdine School of Public Policy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Seth. Always good to be with you.
You too, sir. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Thank you to YRefi for supporting portions of this show. If you're looking for a remarkable investment opportunity, check out my friends at YRefi. They offer a fixed no-load interest rate up to 10.25% return for investors, all in a secure, collateralized portfolio. YRefi is a due diligence-approved firm made up of investors who do well by doing good for others. You can be a part of that. Check them out at investyrefi.com. The word invest, the letter Y, REFY.com, or give them a call at 855-316-3087, 855-316-3087. Thanks for spending some of your week with us thinking about a little bit of the discussion with Pete Peterson and what Jonathan Haidt was teaching the folks at Pepperdine about the youth and young adult mental health crisis based on their experiences with social media. I thought I would come back to an oldie and a goodie by my teacher's teacher, Leo Strauss. The reading of the morning prayer has been replaced by the reading of the morning paper. Not every day the same thing, the same reminder of man's absolute duty and exalted destiny, but every day something new with no reminder of duty and exalted destiny. Specialization, knowing more and more about less and less. The practical impossibility of concentration upon the very few essential things upon which man's wholeness entirely depends. The specialization compensated by sham universality, by the stimulation of all kinds of interests and curiosities without true passion, the danger of universal philistinism and creeping conformism. Concentrate on the few essential things, folks. Concentrate on the few essentials, not the philistinism of creeping conformism. Bless you all. Thank you. Until Monday, I'm Seth Leibson, and class is dismissed.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.